we've got Sean up here, and I just make one comment because we're a little ahead, and we need to start close to on time. But we'll start in just a second. One of the things I was curious about, I didn't see Sean Conley here, but is actually what prompted this session. Apparently, the C3 group met and decided this was a session. I think it's an annoying question that we have with some of the theory that's out there. But the question is what prompted the interest, and that's something that I think we can talk about at the end as well. Larry Purcell alluded to genetics and some of the apparent differences he saw there. Sean's going to look at some of the trends and changes in time over 90 years. And start with a question: is more nitrogen required or acquired with the changes in genetics over time? So Sean Castile, Purdue University.
Thank you, Paul. I'm going to be presenting some work that's been going on since 2010, and it's just been a pleasure to work with this kind of data set. First off, starting off with Brian Dearson and Jim Speck giving us a phone call or an email back in 2010 to talk about, we've got some genetics that we've increased over the past couple of years, and we're looking at just genetic gains, and asked us agronomists if we want to play, and said we definitely did. And so this is kind of how things got started. So in terms of soybeans in the past 90 years, I'm a bit nostalgic, and so I like to kind of go back in history a little bit, and my office is full of file cabinets of just drawers upon drawers of extension materials, and so one of which is a publication back in 1899. It says soybean as a new crop. A comparatively new and promising leguminous crop for Indiana farmers is the soybean. This plant has been successfully grown in different parts of the state and several parts farther north than the U.S. It thrives in good corn soil and will grow wherever corn can be successfully produced. First, all right, we've been following corn for over 100 years, okay? So you want to talk about limitations to soybean yields, we're coming after corn. And so that's a battle that we've gone on for over 100 years. It also continues on and says a crop of soybean can be produced anywhere between the spring and autumn frost in the state, and the one I want to drill down on yields 9 to 12 tons of green fodder, 1.5 to 2.5 tons of hay, and 10 to 40 bushels. This is back in 1899. So, Brian, what have you guys done in over 100 years? Nothing with breeding. Back in 1899, I had 40 bushel beans. So, let's see if we've learned anything. Okay. Also, taking that step back in time is looking at the USDA and some of those numbers that we've gotten over the years. And so when soybeans really came on the board, mid-20s and across the U.S., and here in green is the U.S. and then yellow is Indiana, just to give you a flavor for the yield advancements, on-farm yield increases over the years. And so going across, we're looking at about 23 kilograms per hectare per year with the U.S. and Indiana and most Midwestern states. We're on the line of about 29 kilograms per hectare per year. And so, this trend has been good, but many farmers and most of us say, it's not good enough. If we look at an absolute basis, obviously corn wins out. If you look at a percent basis, they're fairly similar, but it still just doesn't feel that way. And so kind of getting to your point, Paul, why do we want to talk about this? It's, we come second to corn. Pioneer being a good corn company as well as soybeans. And so we want to raise the bar. And so I think that's really where it's been coming from.
Right.
You can talk about where these first beans were just those forage beans, right? They were grown simply for forage with a little bit of seed. And you're advancing into the 40s and bringing in some breeding efforts. And certainly by the 60s and 70s, you add in some of the just straight management, so mechanization to some of the fertility programs, to also bring in herbicide. 70s actually having a stronger increase on the private sector and the breeding efforts, and so a lot of this is coming together. It's not just breeding, it's not just management. Again, a little nostalgic here, so here's another publication, 20 Years of Soybeans. This is the Meharry Farm out of Tolono, Illinois, and the Odell Farm in Attica, Indiana. So across the Illinois-Indiana state line, these aren't too far away, about an hour's drive. And the Meharry Farm planted its 20th consecutive soybean crop in 1928. Okay, so if you want to know anything about soybeans back in the 20s, okay, this was the farm that you would go to. And they had four farms in total, 500 acres of soybean and about 425 acres of corn. Okay, so two things to learn from this. All right, they like soybeans. 500 over 425. We don't see that, right? And so they were in love with it, and they had some successes. They had to be doing 20 years of this as the new crop. And here's a picture dealing with that same thing. Soybean not inoculated off to your left. Soybean inoculated with the Urbana culture off to your right. You can see it even in a black and white picture. All right, what's going on the right? I'm an extension guy. I expect conversation. What's going on with the right side of that picture? Okay, were you listening to Larry at all? You have fixation, you have nitrogen. So you've got more leaf matter, you've got more nitrogen, and there's stronger chlorophyll content off to the left, and that, you know, white pixels, if you will. There's not leaves there, they're yellow, okay? They're nitrogen deprived, point blank, okay? 19, 28, 25, you can see that. What's Urbana culture, by the way? Emerson, did you know? You got lots of culture in Urbana. And you're going to get more of it after I get done speaking as he comes up. What is it? Urbana culture. Guess what that is, Urbana culture. It's soil that's got the rhizobia in it, right? This is Odell Farm. This is Odell Boy, 1925. So he's doing the same thing that I did not quite exactly the same thing. I had peat-based inoculants when I was growing up and helping it to get into the system. But you've got the Urbana culture. You have a little bit of water. You have mud pies. He's inoculating. That's the seed beans. He's going through it. Even distribution. You know, we got grad students to do this now. And the father said, you're not doing it fast enough. Okay, so I bring all this in to just say, you know, nitrogen has been important for soybeans for a long, long time. Inoculation has been a major part of that, and we've realized that from the beginning of truly cultivating this crop. All right, so our objective is greater nitrogen accumulation associated with this genetic improvement. So over these 90 years, is nitrogen supply limiting the potential of grain yield or quality? All right, to answer some of these questions back in 2010, again, thank you, Brian and Jim, for bringing the extension guys and agronomists into this. We had a good set of cultivars to look at. So we provide a non-limiting supply. Larry talked about large quantities, and so a large quantity that we were talking about is 560 kilos of nitrogen per acre. Okay. We had a set of maturity group 2 and maturity group 3 cultivars from 1923 to 2008. Just to give you a flavor, the other studies in particular with agronomists, Conley led a planting date study with these cultivars. We have the nitrogen, we also have seeding rate, and disease component. All these came out within the last year or two in Crop Science and the Agronomy Journal. So 90 years of soybeans, broken down by maturity group 3 here in gold, and there in green is maturity group 2. Just to kind of give you a flavor, so from the 20s, 30s, all the way down to the 2000s, this is a set, okay? Obviously, there's not many back from the 1920s and 30s, but we dealt with what we had and went from there. So, you know, 3 or 2 or 3, again, the 60s, 4, and then look at the magic 1970s period and onward, right? We have more cultivars available. Again, it goes back to some of the breeding efforts that are going public, as well as the private side, so 6, 9, upwards of 18 or 20. So, gives you a flavor. With these cultivars, we have the 3s within Illinois and Indiana, and then the 2s within Wisconsin and Minnesota. Again, I like the pictures, kind of resonates with me a little bit more. So these are the type of cultivars we're talking about. So from the 1927, this is the Illini, actually. 1964, that's the Wayne. 71, Williams. And then Iowa introduction in 2001. What do you see with these four pictures? Narrow leaves, right? So these leaflets up here, leaflets, size of my hand. 4 feet, right? You go down to 2001, open my hand just a little bit, trifoliates are this size, okay? So a major difference in leaf size, orientation, anything else? One of the major advancements within soybean breeding was the standability or the lodging. You know, these are starting to fall over a little bit. 64 is even falling over, but you got a much better stand, and, you know, the standability, not as lodging as bad. Okay, that's in July. All right, so the layout, how this study was put out, we used urea and slow-release urea, so polymer-coated. We put out 200 pounds or 224 kilos up front at planting, right afterwards broadcast, and we had the slow release, you know, 45-60-day type release, and then we brought in the rest, the 300 pounds, about V5, right before R1. We can talk about some of this, as has already been mentioned. But the idea here was just to see what the genetic potential is. I'm not trying to hone in and get what the perfect nitrogen rate is going to be with this. There's a genetic potential there. And so with this, we're putting out enough nitrogen, hopefully to knock out fixation completely, right? And then see what the genetic potential is to go above and beyond. Okay, so 500 pounds, 560 kilos. And when we went to that V5 application, we put the agricane or urease inhibitor, so we're not volatilizing that urea as well. So half urea, half polymer-coated. This is up in Wisconsin in 2011. We did bring in a nod-nod and a nodulating line to have an idea of what the fixation rates were like. Here in the foreground is untreated, non-nodulating, and there in the background, let me take that back. Really a dividing line where it's at, the student that led this project. You might see a little bit of a darker green with the 500 pounds behind there with this particular site, but not much. And whenever you start to do the math in terms of how much nitrogen is being supplied from soil, how much nitrogen is being supplied from fixation, with this set up in Wisconsin, only 23%. Only 23% of the nitrogen was supplied from fixation. Okay, this is going to be important as I go through the results of the coming study. Only 23%. Larry, I think, talked anywhere from 10 to 90%. Okay. So within grain yield, we're going to talk about that, and I'll lay it out here. I've got them side by side. This is kind of how we put it in the article. So maturity of 2 is going to be on your left, maturity of 3 will be on your right. The release year, so as it's associated with those cultivars, is on your x-axis, and then grain yield. So start off with maturity group 2, no differences. The 500 pounds of nitrogen didn't do anything for us in terms of the grain yield. You're advancing in yield across release years, that's due to that genetic improvement, the advancement, the breeding efforts, okay? So no difference due to the 500 pounds, 560 kilos of nitrogen. When you go over to the maturity group 3 is when it kind of gives us a little bit of separation. Now the dotted line or the green boxes is, okay, what's fixation supplying, what's coming from the soil, that combination, just normal. And the solid line or the purple boxes here is going to be 560 kilos of nitrogen. Okay? So this is within over Urbana, this is over West Lafayette, Indiana. These are good prairie soils, high organic matter. So you think about, okay, there's probably it should be enough there to supply your needs, but we're gaining quite a bit. So 12% or so of even these forage type means upwards of 16, I'm tethered here, 16 or 17%. 10 to 12 bushels is what we're talking on the higher end, okay? Talking a fair amount of a yield gaining in these maturity years. The more modern lines seem to be gaining a little bit more, a little more synergistic with the extra nitrogen supplied, okay, rather than their older ones. And we're kind of wondering, well, why? Okay, go back, same layout. This one, seed mass, ever so slightly increased with the nitrogen supplied with the maturity year 2, but it's really nothing to write home about. Let's go back over to maturity year 3. The increase, the solid line, 560 kilograms of nitrogen per acre, pretty uniform across all the way, all our release years. So about 11% increase in seed mass. Okay. Kind of thinking back, what's causing the seed mass increase? We're gaining nitrogen, so is nitrogen going straight up and going to the seeds and going to dry weight, or is there something going on with the leaf and the vegetative matter? And so this is really kind of getting our wheels to spin a little bit of why we're seeing this increase. Okay. As we go through this, 11% increase in seed mass, well, that doesn't add enough to get the grain yield that we talked about earlier. Okay, so there's something going on in terms of the amount of pods or number of seeds that are produced. Within the twos, we looked at a number of factors. So grain yield, grain end removal, total biomass, total nitrogen accumulation, increased across all release years. Okay, that's straight, that genetic combination, that breeding effort. Nitrogen did not It did not increase total biomass within these mature group 2s. It did not increase total nitrogen accumulation. So this was samples taken a little after R6, so maxing out your total accumulation. It didn't do anything there. Grain in removal, it didn't do it there either. Okay. Where it did make an impact on the maturity group 2s, I didn't put it in just because of time. I have it in the slides if you really want to see it. It did increase grain protein. Okay. So the trade-off, you're talking about where you're gaining ground with nitrogen and soybeans, okay? We want to increase yield. Well, in this case, we didn't increase yield. We didn't increase the quantity. We increased the quality, okay? So the trade-off is, okay, you've got more quality, more protein with that nitrogen input, but not what you get paid for, right? Soybeans are a commodity still. We don't get paid for the quantity-quality combination. So that really didn't play out for us. And I will also echo Larry's comment. This is not economical, not environmental, not agronomic by any means, but we're playing around to see what the potential is. Now, looking at the fixation, again, we brought in a non-nodulating and nodulating lines to see how much is being supplied from the soil, how much is being supplied from fixation, the rhizobia. Within the Illinois site, we had upwards of 70% of the nitrogen being supplied from fixation. Okay, Indiana site, we're about 60%. Okay, 60 to 70% of the nitrogen of this crop in this study was coming from fixation. Go back to the Wisconsin site, only 23%. Okay, soybeans are going to take up nitrogen in the easiest form possible. Right, if you put out fertilizer, it's going to take it up. If you got mineralization going on in the soil, it's going to take it up. It costs the plant energy, right, photosynthates to create those nodules and then get the nitrogen from it. Here we're getting that trade-off that we talked about. We dropped down fixation. Now we've got 60, 70% of the nitrogen. Maybe it's not that high, but 50, 60% of that nitrogen is now being supplied from fertilizer. Guess what? Where that energy is going now? It's going into the biomass of that plant. It's going into the leaves. It's going into remobilizing the nitrogen from the leaves into the grain, seed size, as well as I anticipate, we didn't count pods, but I anticipate having a little bit better pod retention as well. So fertilizer then increased the seed mass by about 11%. That trade-off with the energy. Go back to the other side, the quality. Grain protein was not affected. Okay, so within the maturity group 3 set, no effects on grain protein with the nitrogen fertilization. But we had that increase, and as you get to the more modern lines, that 10, 12 bushel range that we're talking about. So no effect on the grain protein maturity group 3. Within the Indiana, we pulled things apart, quite literally pulled out more, just to see what was going on. So within Indiana alone, we literally pulled our 6 plants and pulled off pods. And when I say we, I mean the grad students and the student workers, and looked at how much vegetative material was there, both in leaves, stems, petioles, versus pods, total accumulation of that biomass, and then doing the simple math of nitrogen concentration and accumulation. Now, this isn't the prettiest of graphs, but it's enough to get us thinking. It's enough to get us thinking about why we were seeing the yield increases with the threes and anticipating why we probably didn't see a difference within the twos, but not 100%. So the solid line, again, goes to 560 kilograms of nitrogen versus the dotted line of just what the soil and fixation supply. Within this is vegetative material accumulation of nitrogen. So this is stems, leaves, and petioles. Pods are subtracted out of this. So by R6, 6.5, we're seeing this kind of, again, that synergistic effect as you modernize, as you go across release years, we're gaining more vegetative material that has nitrogen in it and accumulating that nitrogen. Then it's going to the point of, okay, now we're holding on to the pods, and we're going to fill those pods out, and we're going to get seeds that are much larger. So that leaf retention is longer. You get a little more photosynthesis, I anticipate. We didn't measure it. Going back to larger seeds and better pod retention. So in comparison to the old forage line, you know, maybe only 11% increase, but by the time you go to the modern line, you're looking at 27% increase in the amount of vegetative nitrogen that's been accumulated. So an amount of nitrogen accumulated in the vegetative material. So this really kind of led us into the next study, thinking about, okay, we're gaining yields with this 560 kilograms of nitrogen. Can we do anything that's a little bit lower key? And also, is there some just inherent differences that have occurred over the years? And so, potentially we had a prolonged stem and leaf greenness, going back to that remobilization, nitrogen uptake, photosynthesis I anticipate, and increased stored nitrogen for remobilization. The way I've been thinking this, we've gone over this over the past few years and looking at previous studies, is the idea of building a reservoir. Okay, whenever you've got a water tower, right, you're building that water up into the tower so that it can be distributed later. And so the thought process has been that it's building up that nitrogen in that water tower. So then whenever the demand's highest, it's pulling down and it's ready to just fill right away. Okay, not trying to make up ground in the middle of seed fill, but already having it there and then it's immediately available. So with that, leading into the second study, another student brought on with this, looking at the seasonal accumulation pattern. So how the biomass has changed, how the nitrogen accumulation has changed with these cultivars, and see what's really going on, see if we can fine-tune, or find areas to fine-tune. Many of you may be familiar with plant growth and development of soybeans. You know, recently, back in 2009, Pella updated it. And you look at the total of nitrogen accumulation curve, you know, it's pretty standard. But I want to draw your attention that this data is from Hanway and Weber, right? 1971. Okay, these are cultivars from the late 60s. Okay. So that kind of got me to thinking as well, has things changed over these release years? So what we did, we came in at multiple growth stages, a V4, R2, R4, R6, and R8, and we partitioned these. I brought it into the full stages, so if you're not familiar, V4, there's four trifoliates expanding, R2 is the full bloom, R4 is full pod, R6, full seed, and then full maturity. Trying to catch R1, if anyone's familiar with soybeans, as soon as they flower, they can be into R2 before you know it, so I'm catching the other side of this. We honed it down a little bit, you know, 60-odd cultivars to maturity, to partition across this is quite a bit, so I said, well, let's cut it in half. You know, we'll do 25. Yeah, Phil didn't like that one either. Maturity group 2, so about 25, maturity group 3. Trying to do as best of a job as we can to equally represent the decades. Again, there's only so much we can do with those early decades, the 1, 2, or 3, getting in about 4 or 3 per decade. Again, trying to evenly weight this as much as possible. And then coming in and not going to a gnat's whisker in terms of partitioning, but you know, a little coarser scale, looking at leaves and stems and pods. So leaves will always be green on the falling grass, stems are going to be pink, pods will be blue. And then by R8, it's over, it's that combination of stems and pods, and then seed will be in kind of a maroon color. Okay. And doing all the fun work of partitioning it. I'll start with biomass. I'll look at nitrogen concentration and then accumulation. Biomass accumulation. So at V4, that early stage, four trifoliates, you go across, release year, it's the same setup we've had before. On the x-axis, the biomass accumulation. On the y-axis, pink stems, nothing going on. If the leaf matter, there's nothing going on. Biomass-wise, early growth and development of these old lines to new, no differences. Okay, V4. R2, same thing. I'm presenting maturity 3 today just for the lack of time. So R2, didn't see any differences. R4 starts to pull out, but I think a little more interesting to pull it to R6 stage. All right, so as you look at R6, again, green being the leaves, pods being in the blue, and the stems being in the pink. The general trend, as you see across these release years, is that upward trend. What I would even draw your attention to more closely is what's going on post-1970. Okay? Fairly flat, and then we start to increase pretty rapidly. Okay? Maybe a little bit earlier with the 2012 data set. But the idea of how these leaves are accumulating, the biomass production, and then how that would translate into our yields. Okay, think again, what happened about the 1970s. Right? More people coming into this, efforts in breeding. Okay, the idea of gaining yield, a lot of people talk about, well, how do you breed for soybean? You know, you bring the combine in and whichever one's yielding the best is the one you pick. Right? And so some of this could be going on just inadvertently to, you know, I'm trying to get something with a little more photosynthetic capacity. or I'm trying to do a little bit better at disease management. So I think that's also going on with these guys. Switching up the nitrogen concentration, just simply take the leaf sample, you send it in. What's the concentration? All right, I'm presenting here R4, but as early as V4, the first one, we saw a difference from early to modern lines. Okay, so in other words, the modern lines had greater nitrogen concentration, even at V4. Biomass, we didn't see anything, right? Concentrations, we were already seeing differences. The amount of nitrogen in that leaf material. R4 shows a nice linear increase, so going from as low as 4% nitrogen upwards of 5% with the modern lines in about 2000s and 2010. Okay, coming into the point of, all right, accumulating more nitrogen, it goes in part and parcel with the amount of photosynthetic capacity. Not really seeing anything going on with stems or pods, which you would probably anticipate. And then here's a little bit better visual. 1923, 1943, 64, 2011. What do you see? If you're colorblind, don't answer. All right, light green, darker green, you know, it's blue, right? I mean, that chlorophyll content, I didn't measure specific leaf weight, you know, whether they're going to pack in there, but straight nitrogen concentration, this is at R6. I think the picture does a better job, than just simply the graph, saying how these have really changed over the release years. Okay, more nitrogen concentrated in these leaves, again, smaller leaves with the modern line. I think we're all familiar enough with this, that you increase leaf nitrogen concentration, it goes right with the increase in photosynthetic capacity. Leaf nitrogen concentration is increased every single growth stage, every single one, V4, R2, all the way to R6, both maturity groups as well. What about that combination of bringing the two together? Nitrogen accumulation, by the time we get to R4, we really put that biomass and that concentration together and see the true effect. The V4, it really didn't pan out. R2, you start to see it a little bit. The bar R2, you kind of see it. By R4, you see it more pronounced. Linear increase in the amount of leaf material that's accumulated nitrogen. Okay, you have more nitrogen in the leaves, increasing linearly across our release years. Slight increases with stems and pods, but really the name of the game right here is the amount of nitrogen in our leaves. Okay, this is R4. Larry talked about how this really switches the demand for your nitrogen going to the seed and how your leaves are changing and their assimilation. And you see them drop down, you go one stage to R6. They're dropping down. Guess who's coming up? It's the pods. It's where the seeds are getting filled. And so you have the pods. Again, if you've done any work in soybeans, there's some variation in just pod retention. But they're increasing in total, but then also in the linear increase across release years. Still have this nice increase within the leaf nitrogen accumulation. This is becoming more of that quadratic response, and again, that kind of post-1970s seeing a stronger upward trend. Okay. To wrap up with a few points here, is the proportions. How does this really compare to what we already know? What's already been out there? So just picking 3 points in time with our data set of 1923 and 1970 and 2011, look at leaves for simplicity's sake. 21% of the total nitrogen here at R6 with the 1923. At 1970 is 24%. And then we've got 32, nearly a third of our nitrogen at R6 is in the leaves with our modern lines. Okay. Not only have they increased the amount of nitrogen they accumulated, they've also increased the proportion of the nitrogen that is in our leaves. How does this compare to the standard, right? The Bible, the Soybean Growth and Development publication? 1960s cultivars they had, the late 1960s, 25% in the leaves. We had 24%. 18%, 20, 57, 56. It's right in line. Our modern lines are changing. They have changed. The amount of nitrogen that they're taking up and how they're accumulating and distributing that. And that follows what we look at in grain and removal. The 1923 line, the total amount of nitrogen that had taken up by R6, and then it transferred it over to the grain, is 64%. 2011 line, taking up more nitrogen by R6, it also moved more nitrogen to the seeds, 75%. Okay? And I really want to end looking at this distribution. Right? This will be the last series. How the nitrogen has changed across the season as well as across the release years. So postdoc Peter had put together, you know, we averaged three cultivars within the 20s, 60s, 80s, and the 2000s. We've got leaves here in the dark green, we've got stems and stover in that olive color, and then we've got orange representing the pods, the seeds. 1920s, from emergence down all the way to maturity. 1920s, the x-axis here on the left won't change. What's going to change off on your right is a percentage, the total, how that's increasing. Okay, let me go back. 1920s, 1960s, pretty dramatic increase. And note, let's see if I can do it here. Yeah. R6 maxing out and then drops down that total accumulation right down there by R8. 1980s, that's starting to increase. Look at the 2000s, 2010s, right? The total is increasing. Then also, the total is staying within those leaves and then being translocated to the seeds. It's not dropping off at the leaves, it's going to the seeds. Okay, we're gaining that there. All right? So with that kind of gives you an idea of what's going on across these this time. Be happy to answer any questions if I got a half a minute.